Welcome back to the Inside Texas Baseball Show. I'm your host, Evan Veith, as always, joined by Nash Talks Texas right next to me. I am still in yet another backdrop, but this time, this one's going to be a little bit more permanent. There's not as much swag in the background, but this is the new apartment for me. Nash is always looking way better on his side of things with the jerseys in the background and all the Funko Pops. Nash, you've got the best background in the game, I think.
I don't know. I try at least. I'll say that.
Of course, this is the Inside Texas Baseball Show, which is why you should go over to Inside Texas and find the best reporting in all of college sports, and specifically for your Texas Longhorn needs. We wrote about baseball this week. Nash had a great article talking about the roster, which is something we're going to talk about today. But, of course, football recruiting is still very, very important. Fall camp is starting. We're going to be talking to some of the coaches this week. So if you're not subscribed already, Tuesday and Wednesday is a great time. And, of course, our very own Paul Wadlington's Longhorn Football Prospectus, the Thinking Texas Football, the 2025 edition. It's just the best book you can find if you're interested in college sports. Even if you're not a Texas fan, somehow overhearing or watching this, it's got everything from SEC breakdowns, recruiting from our very own Eric Aline, and of course, projections and information about every single player on this Texas roster. But we're here to talk about baseball, Nash, and we're also going to talk kind of through the roster because not a lot of news this week. We did have some news in the infield and the transfer portal, which we'll obviously get to as we do this, but we're just going to start at catcher. And Homer, if you want to just pull up the graphic as you can kind of look through and talk about this. Three players in the catcher spot: Carson Tinney, the Notre Dame transfer, one of the best catchers in the country last year at Buster Posey Award Finals. Andrew Ermus, a JUCO guy, and Presley Corville, a freshman coming in from the high school ranks. Probably not going to see a lot of the latter two this year. Maybe Ermus comes in some situations to relieve Tinney. But my big question for Tinney is: we've been talking all about this guy this offseason, how good he can be. One thing in totality about this team we're noticing is the power numbers may be a little low. For Tinney specifically, what do you think his ceiling is as a power hitter and also as a glove behind the dish? Because that's what Rylan Galvan gave you a lot of last year. Where's that drop off, or is there any drop off?
I mean, Tinney, obviously, him hitting 17 home runs hit last year, he's going to be in the 15 to 20 range. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just some, you know, Nash is just some, you know, baseball. He's drinking the Kool-Aid, right? Tinney is a guy that if he finishes the year how he finished last year, he was hitting .418 on the to the end of the year. Mm-hmm. His exit velos, I wish I had all this stuff and sent to Homer so he could pull it up. But it's off the charts. These numbers are ridiculous. And if Carson Tinney can keep that stuff up, this is a dude that can – he's got 25-plus homer potential. I mean, this is a dude that has some real power in his bat.
And remember, this is a guy who is going to have a lot of eyes watching him for this 2026 draft. The catcher position is such an important one in the sport. And I think one of the nice things about grabbing a catcher in the portal is if you're going to have a player that plays every single game, you're going to invest your portal money into it. Probably the position where they're the captain of the team, can see throughout the field, can do that. Defensively with him, do you think we're getting better than Galvan? Where do you see him being in kind of the Galvan, Gilmetti, what we've gotten past Schuessler as well?
It's hard to say because, I mean, there's obviously so little defense that you can see out there, you know, unless you've sat there and watched all the Notre Dame games. But from what I have seen, I mean, he's at least going to be at the same level or maybe even just a little bit of a step above. Carson Tinney, he can block really, really well.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's even like a talent. It's kind of almost like an it factor type thing. Just the ability to find the ball in chaos, right? That's something. Now, maybe I've only seen a couple plays that he kind of got lucky on, right? But when he's blocking and then that ball just, you know, who knows where it went, he has an ability to find the ball. And I think that just kind of comes down to field awareness. Like some dudes, they might block it and they might be able to feel, hey, that went off my chest at this angle and I know exactly where that ball went. But he has a really good arm. So I think that more than anything with this pitching staff that you have from Max Wiener, where they have you have to get to home within a certain time, the time to home. And if you're not within that range, you're not going to get on the mound because dudes are just going to be stealing bases. Look, and great example of that is look at Tennessee. Tennessee was If you were facing Tennessee, you were running all day long because they were just taking they're knitting mittens up there on the mound in between pitches. But Andrew Ermus too behind him. I think that from what I've seen, that dude he's a very, very good defensive. Now I'm not sure what the bat is going to do at the SEC level, but blocking pitches is blocking pitches. You know, it is what it is, right? And I think that he has the ability to do that. He also looks like he has a really good arm. He's out of Temple College, so he is probably going to be a lesser-known guy, but I think that he is going to get a decent amount because, like, I mean, you mentioned playing every game. I don't know if we're going to play Tenney every single game because, like, I mean, catching back there, one, you do want catchers to go. You do want them going back there, but you don't want to run your guy through, you know, you don't want to go run him into a wall. So, well, it'll be interesting to watch that. And then, personally, Corville, I mean, I honestly don't know too much about that. Don't really follow to high school too much.
Yeah, and it's hard to watch film from the college rankings sometimes. It, like, you just can't get that many Notre Dame games in front of yourself. So, obviously, what you have seen of Tenney is probably more than what most people have seen of Tenney as well. And, yeah, that baseball IQ seemed to be something that rung off from what a lot of other people have talked about him as a catcher. And remember, he was an underclassman last year. So, Texas is getting someone who we saw Galvan take that jump this last year into the junior year. Tenney might be able to do that defensively. Over to first base. You've got Casey Borba and Josh Livingston listed there. That seems like the two that would be most likely to play. Who do you think this job is defensively? Because I think both these players at the current moment are set to be in the lineup, whether it's first base, third base, DH, wherever it is. Who do you think is going to end up winning that spot? And for what reason is it going to be that player?
To be honest, I don't know if I have a really good defensive reason for it. But, I mean, right now I have Casey Borba ahead of him. To be honest, the reason why I have Casey Borba ahead of Livingston is just kind of, you know, putting the lineup together. I think you could honestly interchange DH and first base. Livingston might have a little bit – I might need to, like, switch them around because Livingston might have the nod going to, you know, playing first base because he's already played a little bit of first base in his career. But Casey Borba, I mean, you look at what he did defensively last year at third base, which the hot corner, he had a really, really good year. Like, this is a guy that you really would consider an offensive bat. Like, you consider he's an offensive player with, you know, the potential for defense. And it was honestly really reversed. He was a defensive player last year with the potential to have offense last year. And I think that there is the case where you go, hey, you know, Casey Borba, he's really looking good defensively. Let's put him on the let's put him on the field, and then let's get Livingston's bat in. But I could also easily see where they're like, hey, let's just get Borba's bat in the lineup in the DH slot, and let's throw Livingston first. So I honestly do have a 1-2 right there, but it's probably a coin flip for me.
I think no matter what, you're going to see Borba, Livingston, and Adrian Rodriguez get their shots to play on either of the corners. I think for me, the reason I lean Borba playing here is because you want him on the field from what he showed you last year. But the long-term goal for the Schlossnagel group is to have Adrian Rodriguez play third base and be your starter there. Maybe he eventually plays shortstop for this team. He's got to be able to get out on the field. Injuries hurt him last year. He had to play some left field that he shouldn't have been having to play. Not all his fault, but he does need to play third base for this team long term, and that's, you know, for his own good and for his ceiling. I think that's when you say, okay, we know that we have that, and we have had Borba play there well. Can we put him at first? He's played 16 less games there than Livingston has his career. It's not a ton, but it, like, either way, Livingston's still under 40 games. Borba's under 20, so do with that what you will. But that's not the numbers there aren't so gaudy in difference that I think it's going to make that much of a change for what they're going to want to do. It's going to be a competition, I think.
Yeah, and it is worth pointing out, too, that Adrian Rodriguez, he spent the first, I think, like, of the 13 games that he had at a third base, I forget what it was, but it was like he started the first 7 or 9 games at third base. So this is a deal where the coaching staff last year obviously thought really high of him as a third baseman and wanted to put him in the field. I think that's only going to continue as he gets older. I mean, like, this is – Adrian Rodriguez is a really, really special player.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to be playing 22 games at second and left field this next year. I'll just say that.
No. If he does, it's not a good thing. It's not a good
thing. Well, and that would be a problem because of what we're talking about coming up right here. Second base, obviously, you know Ethan Mendoza. Everyone listening knows Ethan Mendoza. The guy was a fantastic addition for this team. Either going to hit leadoff or something around that idea of being up in the order that he did last year. But – Callum Early was it's the actual news we've gotten this week, which we could have let off the show with. We knew we were going to get to it early. Callum Early, second baseman from Liberty, is coming over from the transfer portal. Just happened, I think, a few days ago. Multiple-year eligibility guy, lefty swinging bat. why do you think that he was the choice to play there? And is he going to be a second base only kind of guy, or is there some upside that maybe he gets turned into like a shortstop long term? What do you see happening with this player?
To be honest, I'm not really too sure on the defense. I haven't really paid too much attention on the defensive side, but what I can tell you is he's probably in a similar boat as Timo Becerra offensively. These are dudes that they're going to hit the ball. They're just going to hit the ball well. They're going to hit the ball for average. The ball may not, you know, you're not going to see a ton of doubles. You're not going to see a ton of triples. You're not going to see a ton of home runs, right? But you're going to see a lot of hits and a lot of good solid contact. So I think that them kind of being in the same boat offensively, that could, you know, lend a hand to them, you know, competing for that shortstop job. Because yeah, Ethan Mendoza feels about as like of all the positions on this graphic, Carson Tenney and Ethan Mendoza are the two that I would like. If I had to, if you said, "Hey Nash, you got to go bet on Vegas on somebody to be the starter of the positions," I'm one of those two positions is about as soon as you can get.
Yeah, when you look at early, you know, he was a freshman last year and played a good bit for this Liberty team, had over 100 at-bats and had a strong OPS numbers, mostly because of batting average. His OVP was higher than a slugging, which you don't see often. He came in as a prep prospect out of Virginia as he was a shortstop. It was shortstop slash second base slash outfield slash right-handed pitcher, which kind of goes to show what Schlossing was looking for in this kid. It's like a guy who can do kind of everything. Long-term, if you need him to be maybe an emergency left fielder the way that Duplantier went into that role, I think that's something that this early guy can do. And when you're taking these shots on a freshman who hit that well last year, even if he was playing at Liberty, it's always probably a high percentage shot that this guy, if he's willing to come off the bench, it's good. And what we've been talking about a little bit this last week after Caleb Freeman signed with the White Sox is you wanted Josh Levine to be your 10. He seems, you wanted him to be your 10th guy in the lineup because that would be such a good player to have in your 10. He's a starter on a lot of teams. He's an SEC starter. But he's a ninth guy or an eighth guy, whoever you want to put him there. I think early kind of brings you back to that idea that Texas has a really good bat off the bench as well. We'll talk in the future about Anthony Pack Jr. I think I'm much more confident now in what Texas's bench looks like than I was 5 days ago, maybe when Freeman was going off the board and I thought Pack maybe would have gotten taken in the MLB draft a week ago. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty much in the same. when you saw Freeman go off the board after Marnak, it was like, okay, you start looking at the okay, who's available in the portal? Easton Winfield, please come back.
He's at Houston. Went to Houston.
Yeah, no, he is at Houston now. But I mean, but that did happen after we had packed fall. So I think there were certain things that kind of helped nudge that happen. But and also want to wish the best for Easton Winfield. I really want to see that. I think Houston's a good fit because, him, Texas boy, he wants to be Texas.
Go tear it up in the Big 12.
Yeah, hey, he could. But, this Callum Early dude, I think that, like I said, I really hadn't paid too much attention to the defense. But I think another thing that needs to be mentioned on offensively is he had been dealing with injuries last year, very similar to an Adrian Rodriguez. So, this is a guy that, like you said, I mean, it feels like a very high percentage bet.
Yeah, I like the process from the staff. He's
and left-handed hitter, which Schloss loves.
6'1", 170, so we've got some room to grow. I mean, second baseman, so it's not going to be full. And super important to add that much weight. But the thing you'll notice, let's go over to third base, where I think we both come to the idea that this is probably they want to start Adrian Rodriguez here. I'm going to make a little comparison here, and I want to take your gauge of where you see this football to baseball. Because Rodriguez and Volantis are seen as, if not the two best prospects for the 2027 draft, then two of the top 10, two of the top five. Rodriguez, is he kind of this year's Colin Simmons for Texas, where last year you saw him in a more of a reduced role, playing a role? Now he's going to be expected to be a star. Do you think he could be that kind of player for Texas, what we expect Colin Simmons to be as a football player, a true star, the number one hitter on this team, the one that everyone's talking about? Is that what we're going to get from him this year? Because seems like that's what the staff kind of thinks is going to happen.
See, it's really interesting that you said, like, that you brought up the Colin Simmons argument. Because Colin Simmons, I feel like a lot of people are, kind of predicting him to be that number one overall draft pick in the 2027 draft. And the irony is, too, or 2026, but in the No, no, 27.
It'll be 27. Yeah.
The irony is that Adrian Rodriguez is sitting in the same boat for that 2027 draft. Yep. Right now, if you look at the Baseball American Hot Board, Adrian Rodriguez number one, Dylan Vlantis number three, right? And so it's just one of those deals. Yeah, I could really see that. And I do also I would say it's a little bit different because Colin Simmons wasn't injured. And that's kind of how Adrian Rodriguez got to a little bit of a limited role. And then also having to be forced out there into left field, right? Like it just Colin Simmons was coming on as much as Colin. Like it was, hey, we're gonna spoon feed you until we're just gonna start shoveling food in your mouth, right? And it's not necessarily what was happening for Adrian Rodriguez, but I'll see how fat because we'll get to Ashton Larson, and I'll have something that hopefully Homer can pull up here because Adrian Rodriguez and last year. And Ashton Larson's freshman year, very, very similar. Very, very similar. So I know I'm doing a lot of talking. We'll get back to this in a second. But let's when we get to the right field, let's start right field and work our way to left field. But staying on Adrian and Casey, I mean, Adrian's just such a special freshman. Like, this is – you just
– really?
He's a big body dude. He's got, like – He seems – and then this is the funny thing is you never really thought of him as a super, like, fast guy, right, burner.
Mm-hmm.
But he's out there stealing, like, 15 bags, to see. Like, so he's obviously got some, a little bit of a dog to him, to himself. But, he got a little bit of that dirt bag in him. But, yeah, man, I really like Adrian Rodriguez. He's a very special talent that I think we're going to see go high in the MLB draft.
Yeah, and I think that's one where you have to accept that some players are just going to have to step up when you're playing with these high-level talent, these teams. I think Rodriguez is one of the easiest bets to find that. Going over to shortstop, we've known about Timo Becerra for a while. That's been the guy since, it seemed pretty obvious that Flores was going to sign with the Cardinals this week. How are you feeling about this spot? Because I think when a fan looks at it, just looking at numbers and names, they see Timo Becerra, Jaden Duplantier. You don't want to hear what people say about Jaden Duplantier in our game threads, but it's definitely not flashy. So where do you stand on where this is? Because it's probably a 9-hole hitter no matter what, or 8-hole, whatever. Not some kind of huge name coming out of the portal. Are you happy with where it's at? Do you wish they'd done a little bit better? Where do you stand?
Where I stand is I trust the coach's ability to, determine who's the right fit for Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, we've talked about it before. It's going to be really interesting to see, was it the Stanford, player kept field that, is it all because of that? I talked about his bat, touched on his bat a little bit earlier. It's very similar to Callum Early. You're going to get a lot of, you're going to hit the ball a lot. He hit 330 last year, but it's like he barely hit any extra bases. So it is kind of, ironic that you get a guy that can hit the ball that well, but he's just not flying far. And he's a senior too. So it's not like a deal where Callum Early could, add in some power and develop into a bigger body, right? Timo Becerra, you kind of know what you're going to get with Timo Becerra.
Yep.
And being a super senior guy. And I just, the one thing that you do know that you're going to get from him is you're going to get a good arm. This is from looking at the grades, from scouts, looks like his arm is just going to be a touch below what Jalen Flores was, but you're still going to be able to, get the job done in the shortstop position. As for Jaden Duplantier, I mean, honestly, he's probably not the second string at shortstop.
Yeah.
Right. And especially now, like that might have been the case a few weeks ago or a week or two ago, but especially with the addition of Callum Early. I mean, Adrian Rodriguez probably, if Timo Becerra, if something ever happened, Adrian would probably get a shot there over Jaden. But at the same time, I have so much respect for the Duplantier family, their brothers. I mean, these dudes are as Texas as you can get. Texas through. Really? Like, these are Longhorn fans. So I'm not going to blow smoke up anybody's ass, but I'm not going to talk down on a dude. But what you are going to get out of Jaden Duplantier is if we need a guy to come into the field, he's probably going to be one of the emergency options. And then if you need a guy to get on the base paths, he's going to be one of those pinch running options. as much as fans and threads may not like to, you know, hear or see his name during games, you're going to see it because one, he's trusted.
Yeah. I think the problem with Duplantier last year for some fans is that they didn't like that he was kind of the 11th guy on a team that had a lot of injuries, which shouldn't be the case this year. I don't think that's where he's going to slot in. It's basically Texas has seven infielders right now because the freshman class didn't add any infielders to this team. You know, Fien and Cunningham would have been that. They got two good of players committed to the team. But, you know, he might not even be the first choice shortstop off the bench. And then he's definitely not the first choice of third or second or first or outfield or whatever. So you're not going to see him in these situations where he's got to take four at-bats in the game. It's going to be maybe a pinch hit, definitely a pinch run. Someone needs help in the field, go put him out there. That's why you like having a senior shortstop like him in. And I think that's fine. And on the note of Becerra, we've talked about how in college sports nowadays, with how NIL works, you just have to take some budget options in a way. You have to pick and choose where you're going to go and say, I'm going to drop a ton of money to get this guy to come here. Obviously, that's what Carson Tinney was. You don't get a guy like Carson Tinney without giving him some NIL money in that case. It's the same thing with football when you want to get a transfer wide receiver versus a transfer linebacker or something like that. I think Texas had to go a little bit cheaper. I think shortstop's fine, and that's an all right spot to go with this team where it's at because you did well at filling the outfield with transfers that are some higher profile guys, an SEC guy, a really good hitter from Seton Hall. Where's the Robins from? Was it Seton Hall? Tinney, obviously, from Notre Dame. Livingston, maybe another more of a budget guy, but like if it had to be someone, I would take a contact hitting veteran shortstop who, though the numbers aren't great, I think you'll find the time to trust his glove pretty quickly into the season. I think that's a good spot to be for these Texas fans. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our own Josh Holden before we get into the outfield and a little bit about the pitching staff.
Hi, guys. Sorry to interrupt, but if you're thinking about buying or selling a home in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area, you need to contact Josh Holden. The Metroplex is massive, and the local real estate market is full of nuances and subtleties only an experienced agent like Josh can help you navigate. From Preston Hollow to Highland Park, uptown to old East Dallas, Josh will be there to guide you through the process of buying or selling your home. Now, Josh is a UT grad, a lifetime Texas X. He's reliable, savvy, and from a personal perspective, he's a really great guy to chat with. So why don't you give him a call and chat with him today about your real estate needs in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area. His number is 972-917-8081. That's 972-917-8081. Or you can reach him at his website, which is joshholdenrealestate.com. All the contact details are in the description below. Thanks so much. And back to the show.
So, of course, we talked about a little earlier in this episode, but Ashton Larson, left field, guy who had a really good freshman season at LSU, kind of fell out of the rotation as a sophomore. I think they're saying you want Homer to pull up here from here, Nash. Also, William Hill, who's a freshman guy coming in. That's for Aiden Robbins. That's my bad on that. Not for Aiden Robbins. We'll start with Ashton Larson. Talk about this guy because we did a little
Let's start with Aiden Robbins if he already has
Aiden Robbins. Yeah, let's do that. So let's go out to right field with Aiden Robbins. Like I said, Seton Hall transfer. This guy's been mashing in the Cape Cod League and in the suburb. You can see these numbers, the 947 OPS, 85 at-bats, not a ton of sample size. Hitting more home runs than we'd expect from him. You can see his stats at Seton Hall the year before. He hadn't been a big home run hitter. I guess it's not going to be up right here. Wasn't a big home run hitter, but it seems like he's really finding his groove as a player right now. What are the odds that Texas found maybe their best player on their team, or at least in the outfield in the transfer portal?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, this is like you go to this isn't just like there is a stat like website that it's kind of like an advanced stat website that I forget what the exact stat is, but they have him as the best hitter in college baseball. Mm-hmm. And this is I'm pretty sure I've seen tweets about like Kendall Rogers, you know, echoing similar sentiments. And I've heard from multiple other places. So I mean, this is a deal where if he isn't the best hitter in college baseball, he is one of the best hitters in college baseball last year for 2025. And what you're getting is, I mean, hitting 294 in the Cape Cod League where you go and you look like that, this is against some of the top competition in all of college baseball playing there. In a wood bat league too, he's also hitting six homers. Well, hey, six homers in 22 games, that sounds pretty good considering – he hit six homers in 53 games. in 2025 with a metal bat. So, I mean, it does feel like if you have the power that's coming along, that, you know, looks like it's there, because this isn't, the ball's not just sneaking out over the fence. Like, he's hitting 400 foot bombs in the Cape Cod.
On wood.
I'm trying to hit the brakes right now, right? And not do, but this feels like, this feels like a Golden Spikes level dude. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like this potential of a guy.
And remember, like, who won the SEC Player of the Year this past year? Wahiwo Loy, Sacramento State was his call to fame before he came to Arkansas. It's not uncommon for these college guys that are coming from smaller programs to maybe just not be the person that they could be as a freshman and eventually make their way up to the SEC. And obviously, Texas has some Max Belusi shoes to fill in right field. How many players in the transfer portal are giving you what the confidence that Aiden Robbins is giving Texas fans right now? Probably not many, if you can even count it on your fingers how many guys look this good at right field from the portal. If, you know, 22 to 53 games, double that number, get to 12 home runs. If he's a 12 homer and, let's say, 30 total extra base hit guy for Texas next year, he is going to be in the race to be one of the best in the SEC because he has five tools. I mean, he's got a great arm. He's a fast guy. He's maybe not going to completely steal bases, but there's a difference between base stealing and using your speed out in the field. Obviously, he's been known for his contact for a while and his glove. Very excited to see what he's going to do for this team. We can move over to center field now. Jonah Williams is what we currently have there. But, of course, the question that's going to surround him is, say this Texas football team, excuse me, is playing football until mid to late January because they're one of the best teams in the nation. And Jonah Williams has found a role on this team, whether it's special teams, but he's actually starting at safety in some fashion, respect, getting 20 snaps a game. That's a lot on a player's body, especially after he came in early to school to play baseball, then is going right into summer camp for football and now playing football again. Do you think there's a chance that maybe you see Anthony Pack get some of these early starts, early chances, because Williams needs a second to just recover his body? And is that maybe part of the reason that Pack was telling teams, or we don't know exactly what happened with Pack, but why he wasn't drafted, because he was telling teams, I think I have a better chance of playing in Texas. What's going to happen here at center field? There's so many questions that kind of come together with this.
The way that I see this is, I mean, it's most likely that if Texas is playing late into January, I mean, Jonah Williams is going to – he's probably going to be in that DH role, right, mm-hmm. if he is playing. And it's going to be – you're probably going to see like an Aiden Robbins playing out there in center field because you just mm-hmm. want that experience out there. And then that's where you can get into like maybe right field. You're getting like a little bit of a competition between Anthony Pack Jr. and Maddox Monsieur. I mean, these are both dudes. Maddox Monsieur, Maddox is a guy that he has the ability to have power. He's really fast. He has, you know, a really good arm. So, I mean, if the fielding is there, I mean, this seems like a potential five-tool guy. Like the way that I kind of feel, like it feels like a Max Blue, right? He feels like he could develop into a Max Blue. He's going to be really raw if he has to play year one, right? But it's what you're going to get. And then Anthony Pack, probably going to be a little bit more, you know, day one ready.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously this, like, Anthony Pack is the highest. If he does indeed make it to the roster and makes it to the, you know, the 2026 roster, he's behind, or not behind, tied with CJ Hinojosa. He is the highest rated recruit that Texas has gotten as a, not just a, you know, pitcher or anybody, right? So Anthony Pack obviously is going to figure, you know, some level into playing early. And then William Hill, probably on the outside end, looking for playing time year one, as less refined. But there's going to be some level of shuffling around if Jonah Williams is playing late into January. And it's just one of those deals that it's what we're going to have to accept if it happens.
Anthony Pack is currently the highest rated outfielder that is going to make it to college because the four ahead of him, he's the number five in the class. The four ahead of him all were drafted, guys like Slater, DeBruin, Gamble, players who just never were going to make it. But this is a guy who I do think that day one impact is going to show because he is an insane athlete. Like, you call Williams a great athlete. 60-yard dashes are a little less common for people who don't play baseball. That was something that, like, you grew up playing baseball, you know, you're kind of making it up when they start testing your 60s. He ran a 6.46, which is unheard of for like a 17-year-old. He is an unbelievable athlete, extremely fast, really high-level glove, going to hit a lot of singles early on. I think that's why he does have this chance to like, hey, I want to just be a starter on this team freshman year. Give me a reason that you need to take me out of the lineup. I think he's going to come up with this mentality that he's going to have the chance to be a starter on this team. And that's exactly what Schlossnagel and this team wants, is to have a group of players that have this almost ego about them. Like, hey, I need these starting positions because I'm that talented.
And that's one thing that I love about Maddox Monsieur. He's got the attitude, man. Right? Mm-hmm. Like I do. Like, I love being able to, I love players that have attitude, but also are able to control it. Like I do love like seeing like Maddox Monsieur out there. He hits a home run and gets to the locker room a couple hours after he's tweeting the dinger, you know, with a nice yep. little caption, right? So I love that. But and then same thing with Anthony Pack. I mean, Anthony to be a high schooler, like a 17-year-old, and you go, you know what? Yeah, I want to play him, because that was the, you know, that was the thought, is hey, we ain't gonna get Anthony Pack. This yeah. guy wants to go pro, and because he obviously is talented enough to do that. It's just, man, you got to have a lot of confidence to be a 17-year-old and go, you know what? Those are 23, 24-year-olds, right? Sometimes in some cases, 27, 28-year-olds, these grown men that I'm going out there, you know, having to fight for bread against. So Anthony Pack Jr., like you mentioned, you're not going to get a lot of power out of that year one, especially. Yeah. But what you are going to do is you're going to see a lot of consistency, and that he does have a good, really good glove and really good speed. Like intangibles are there.
Monster is also a two-sport athlete, played football, has the best jawline you'll ever see as well. So that's a big plus for him. Let's go over to Ashton Larson, guy who, like we said earlier, amazing freshman year at LSU. Kind of seemed like a dude who's going to ascend into this 2026 really good draft pick. Didn't really play much last year, but these are the comparisons of he and Rodriguez as freshmen. You can see all these numbers are very similar, but outside of base percentage, Larson kind of is favored here on a lot of these things, more hits, more power, things like that. Of course, Adrian Rodriguez got hit by a lot of pitches last year, which is funny, but these numbers were really, really solid from Larson. So what does it take for Texas even to just get freshman year Larson in his junior year? And if they get that easily, what could come from this player? Because this one of those guys where like the ceiling floor are very drastic in the differences for him.
I mean, to be honest, I think that they don't really have to do much other than just get him here. Because it feels like a situation where LSU brought in, you know, some transfer portal guys, and they kind of ended up having a room where Larson kind of ended up getting pushed into that 10th man role. Right. But when he did come, he came off the bench and he pinch hit successfully multiple times in the year, hitting home runs as a pinch hitter. So, and that's a really, going from a starter to a pinch hitting role is a really, really hard thing to do as a baseball player. Yeah. And it's a really hard thing to, you know, keep consistency with your bat and the pinch hitting. So I'm not going to look too much into the stats this last year, but the way that I look at this is, man, like, this is like having Adrian Rodriguez, and we're going out there and we're benching Adrian, right? And we're pinch hitting Adrian in year two. That's what happened to Ashton Larson this last year. So
they still won a natty.
It's wild, right? And it shows why LSU did have the talent to go out there and win a national championship. Because you got to be pretty damn talented to, you know, have a dude that was hitting .337 in SEC play, and think we're gonna pinch hit this dude. Now, looking at these stats, some of the viewers might, you know, correctly have already started typing comments down below. Adrian Rodriguez probably gets the nod in these stats despite being lower in some of these, because how early was Missouri in these conference games for Adrian Rodriguez? So for Adrian to go out there and not only hit a .333 level, but, you know, just hit consistently at that level with an injured hand, and also being restricted to only one side of the plate where he's a switch hitter. So Ashton Larson, I'm really, really excited to see what this bat is going to do as a junior, because he's definitely – he's going to have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, and I wrote it in one of in our thread on your article. Just, you know, if no, Marinek had never been a name uttered to Texas fans before he got drafted, and Larson was the pick originally, there might even be more excitement for what was coming in left field. So, not a big difference. It's kind of like it's almost more of a Gasparino replacement. You're getting a guy from that class to come in, who was another really highly touted freshman in left field. We're gonna quickly go over, if you want to pull back up the other graphic, Homer, to starting pitching and relief pitching. We're gonna run through these fairly quickly, Nash. Starting pitching. We have Volantis, Harrison, Riojas, Bing. Seems like a very solid 1-4, really high potential on this 1-4. And just a group that right now you need to break into to alter this. Who do you see as a person that might be able to break into out of maybe that freshman group on the right, or just the right relief pitcher group on the right as the top right as well? Is there anyone who you think is going to really early on be testing some of these guys like Bing or Riojas to say, like, I want that Sunday role?
I mean, obviously, the easy answer is Dylan Volantis, you know, having him, you know, kind of push into that Sunday role. But I think really Cade Bing is the guy that I'm really watching for the Sunday role, because, one, that was his role going in. Similar to the conversation we had for Adrian Rodriguez, that was his role going in. But, I mean, from what I was hearing, his emotions were too – like, he needed to keep his emotions more even-keeled for Max Wiener. You know, to have him as a weekend guy, and especially going into the SEC play, right? That's not just doing bad and, you know, throwing your hat on the ground or anything like that, right? That could be as much as striking a dude out and, you know, getting too high on yourself. So, you know, being able to remain even keeled being a huge thing for him. I want to see that with Max, with Cade Bing. And from what we saw to Cade Bing, I mean, there are multiple times that he goes out there, like the UTSA game in the first time we played UTSA, what was it, like a no-hit game out of six innings?
Something like that,
And we
really
good. It's like, how does that happen, right? We've seen some really, really good performances from Cade Bing that, man, like the potential's there, right? You've seen it. Like, you've seen the flashes now. Can we just put it all together and go out there and have a dominating season? Because, I mean, you look at this too, also – having the ability to, there's a chance that we have Dylan Volantis, Harrison, and Bing as our starters, and we're just sitting there trotting out all lefties, right? And it's just annoying teams.
No one wants to face that.
they're like, what the hell, man? Where's our righty? Where's our token righty that
we get? We built this lefty based lineup for the SEC play, and now we got to face three lefties this weekend.
But I also do want to say, man, I don't just think it's like guys that are listening, because the starting pitching, the potential for starting pitching is going to go be like, Ruger Riojas might not be a starting pitcher next year, just based off his ability to go out there in a high leverage situation, right? And it's going to come down to, let's mix and match this and let's go with what looks best, right? And gives us the best chance to win. And that, I mean, you got guys like a Hudson Hamilton, who Max Wiener was really high on. You saw him start the last game of the season. I mean, that was his first game, but when you're starting the most important game of the season, obviously you're doing something right to the coaches, right? You also look at a guy like a Jason Flores. He could end up being a starter. Thomas Burns, he was a starter at Arizona State, and the original thought was, hey, let's slowly bring him back, and then let's move him back into that starting role. There's a lot of, and then that doesn't even tap into the freshman that, you know, you could have one of those freshmen that, hey, you got another like dude that looks like Dylan Melantis out there. It's just, there's a lot of options and there's a lot of talent in this pitching staff.
Yeah.
And it's the part of the team that I'm the most confident in.
I wholly agree with you there. And I think my number one point I was going to say to come back from you is Riojas, in my opinion, I will stick by this, is at his best when he can come out of the pen in important situations, leverage into extended innings. Your guy gets banged up in the fourth inning, Riojas until the seventh. Get a few key outs and then pitch three more innings of good ball. That's where I see his ceiling as in best product would be from him doing that, which means that might open up a spot for, I think the two names are Cozart and Crossland, of guys who could really be like dominant against like,
or even a Winter, 18s. Michael Winter too.
Yeah, Michael Winter's another one who came in late. Guys who might be dominant against Tuesday teams, they might not end up being a Sunday starter, but you want players. Texas had a trap this last year where they got a little too comfortable against Tuesday teams and ended up not playing that well and dropping some games they shouldn't have. Obviously, the goal is to go 100% on those games this year. if you can find a fresh corner, you feel that confident, that's just an awesome spot to be in. We're going to go quickly into relief pitching as our last thing here. Just a baseline idea. We came into the draft thinking that Grayson Saunier and Luke Dawson were going to be a part of this organization this next year. Obviously, that's not what happened. Saunier gets picked by his childhood team. Dawson gets a good slot, a good value, goes off to the MLB or in the minor leagues. In inverse with that, you've got players like Cozart and Crossland to stay, Westfall as well. Kind of guys that you didn't think were going to make it. So it overall evens out. But without Saunier and Dawson, but also knowing what we have in these freshmen, maybe what you're going to have in Riojas there, where do you think this bullpen's going to rank in the SEC? Is it still one where you're going, I don't know if I'm taking anyone else above them, or maybe drumming down a few spots in like a tier two spot area?
It's got to be in the top three. I mean, and I'll say this. Ruger Riojas, from what you said, if Ruger Riojas is a, you know, high leverage guy, that's you're going to be hard to find a better bullpen. I just like it's if you're telling me we can go from Dylan Valantis go six or seven innings, hand the ball to Ruger, he goes through the lineup one time, the ball to Max, he goes through the lineup one time, and then, you know, bring in Burns to, you know, just throw in a bunch of 100-mile-an-hour, you know, heaters. I'm like, that's going to be a really, really hard pitching rotation to, you know, four pitchers to go out there and get a win against. And that's just four examples of the Ruger, Riojas, and Max Grubbs. It's just, it's going to be hard to find two guys that have a better mindset going into high leverage games. Because I maintain it. There's only so much that talent can do for you as a pitcher, right? There's a ton of guys that, you know, throw flamethrowers. They're flamethrowers. They're 98 miles an hour, right? They can do all – they have all the, you know, all the intangibles, all these measurables and all that stuff. They got it all, right?
Yeah.
But they can't sit up – they can't deal with their own head. It's a hard thing to do to stand on that island, and it's even harder to do it when there's guys on second and third with the game on the line.
You're 19 years old.
And Max Grubbs and Ruger Riojas seem to thrive in those instances. So, like, I mean, this is just one of those deals where, like, you cannot buy that, right? And I'm just – the amount of confidence that I have in those two to be able to go out there. And also, I mean, Dylan Valantis is the same thing, same argument, right? But he's probably going to be a starter if we're being honest. But if he's not a starter, that means somebody else is doing a really good – they're doing really, really good where Max Wiener's like, I get the luxury of having this dude as my closer now, right? And, like, y'all aren't –
pick your poison.
Like, try and win a game. Ha, 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 right? Like, that's how the attitude is going to be if we have a guy that, you know, can push Dylan Valantis down to closing. It's just like, we got three really good starters. Who knows? I mean, if you also have a situation where Dylan Valantis and Ruger Riojas aren't starting, oh yeah, that bullpen. I'm drafting that bullpen.
I don't think anyone else in the country is going to touch that.
Give me if you have a situation where Max Grubbs, Riojas, and Valantis are all available for high leverage innings. I mean, this is the type of bullpen that can actually go and do significant damage in an Omaha environment like that. It's going to be hard to beat this pitching staff if that's the case.
Yep, I agree. And I think even at a very worst-case scenario, you know what you have in a Grubbs, a Burns, a Higgins, a LeFou, and that's already a great baseline for your pitchers. Anything from there is luxury. And a lot of luxury. Yeah, and add Walker in there too. It's luxury, but it's things that you expect to be good. And I think there's a lot of guys you can expect to step up in that Hamilton, Howard, Flores tier. That's going to do it for us over here at Inside Texas Baseball. Thank you, Nash, as always, for a fun episode. I love when we can just kind of go through the roster, talk about every player, because we now probably have the most solid idea of what's going to be. You know, August 1st is the signing period for players. I think everyone's signed at this point. Rylan Galvan, shout out to him for signing with the White Sox. As always, go over to InsideTexas.com. It's the best spot you can find for all our coverage on baseball. We have Keenan and I doing basketball there, our Wednesday shows, and then, of course, football. Fall camp's coming up. You're going to hear from us as soon as tomorrow about some of these position coaches and positions. And then, of course, the Longhorn Prospectus, Paul Oblington's awesome book about the 2025 Texas Longhorns. Best spot you can go if you want to. There it is. If you want to find it, the link's in the description to read about everything Texas football. It is just, if you need a catch-up guide right before that Ohio State game, please read this because it is a magnificent book. Great, great thing to put on your coffee table as well. I think that's going to do it for us over here at Inside Texas Baseball. Thank you so much, Nash, as always. And you'll be seeing this background a little bit more than you had in the past. So get excited for that. See y'all.
With a little bit more memorabilia.
A little more memorabilia in the background. Maybe some DC stuff too. That's going to be it for all of us. See y'all.